Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hallgren, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. We are doing this on a Monday, and I want to say before we get started that while our day did start out with new Conor McGregor news, by the time you're hearing this, that might have changed three times. So before we talk about anything, I just wanted to set the stage and say that it is 11 a.m. on Monday, Eastern time.
Eastern. Got to get the time zone in, because this could change seven times in 2 minutes.
In the next hour, I don't know what to, we've got our phones open, and if something happens, we will have it. But as of right now, this morning, and this is very strange with the return of Jon Jones, that we're once again starting the show with Conor McGregor. But
yes.
Conor McGregor has tweeted and said he is back in to UFC 200. Now, before we break this down, Ken, I don't know if you watched Friday the UFC 200 press conference, but this doesn't surprise me because on more than one occasion, young Nate Diaz said, look, especially to Ariel Helwani, because they, of course, have a bit of a kindred spirit. So when they were going back and forth, it was quite fun. He said, hey, Ariel, if it's not Conor McGregor, I'm going on vacation.
Yeah, he said, I'm retiring too, essentially, is what he said inside this fight.
I am not doing
this presser.
You know, I'm not doing this if there's no Conor McGregor. And then the third time he said it, Dana White finally had to kind of respond as he's standing right next to him and going, well, I don't anticipate this being a long conversation between Nate and I, because he's been very clear on what he needs, which is young Conor McGregor.
Well, it was kind of interesting, too. Did you watch a lot of the actual presser?
I watched the whole thing, yes.
Okay. So you saw over and over again, reporters kept asking, yeah, but Conor's kind of promoted this in a way that's better than whatever you're doing here today. So doesn't he deserve to sit this out, since he's already done a better job than you're doing? Dana, what do you think?
And
then Dana would be just exasperating and go, look, guys, everybody's got to show up at the pressers. That's what we got to do. That's part of the job.
Well, and what I thought
my favorite part was when he was on stage, though, and he pointed out all the fighters on stage, and these guys had to come from all over Brazil. Then he realized everybody else was from America.
Right.
And then he said Jersey. So that's pretty far, too. That's like Iceland.
Well, and what I thought was particularly interesting is his repeated times that he said, I don't think that's fair. This isn't fair. How would this be fair? All while, right next to him are Jose Aldo and Frankie Edgar, who don't get to fight for the real title because you wanted to do this rematch with Nate Diaz.
Mm-hmm.
All while, let's not forget, we can go back to the fact that GSP wanted to sign but hasn't been able to sign because we can't figure out a way around this Reebok deal. All while, it's been fairly well documented that Brendan Schaub left the organization because he made more money making a podcast than he did by signing the Reebok deal. So it's really weird to me that that is the cross that you'd like to carry around the UFC, saying that we're an organization that is based on fairness, which if you were, I would be okay with. But you're not, so stop pretending that you don't treat people one way or the other. Right?
And all you got to do is pull out the podcast from a couple days ago, because, I mean, we went over this over and over again ad nauseum. To have this be the situation you decide to lay the law down and draw the line in the sand, it seemed really, really strange. I get it. You've got the, you know, and kind of looking at a little more, I see a little more of the UFC's perspective because, honestly, we don't know timelines of things until essentially they happen. And I kind of get it. You know, you had a lot of media there for Jon Jones' return. This was probably a pretty big presser. This wasn't your run-of-the-mill presser. And Dana did make the point, hey, guys, we're far enough out so that all these guys can have a camp. And he explained a little bit of the process, because we'd wonder this a lot. We wondered this back when Conor McGregor was doing the first round of his press with Jose Aldo. And we said, what are we doing now? Why? We're so far out. I want this fight to happen tomorrow. Dana straight up said it at the presser on Friday, said, we schedule these far enough out so that fighters can have their camps. It's not the best for us, but we want the fighters to have their camps. These fighters are all here. They can all have their camps now because we've scheduled this thing so far out. So he did explain that. That does make a lot of sense. That's one of the things you and I have theorized about quite a few times, talking about some of these big pressers. So I get it. There were a couple more things at work that we got to see on Friday than we necessarily knew about before actually kind of going into the presser. I get what was going on. Everybody was there because the Jon Jones fight was happening.
Sure.
Everybody was there. So I get it. You want to do your UFC 200 presser. You want to set this thing up. There's a lot of talk about DC John at UFC 200. So we've got all the buzz. We've got all the excitement. Okay, dude, let's have our A-level star here. In that regard, I can understand Dana White's position a little better than I understood it last week. But when it comes down to it, you've got your A-level attraction tweeting out and getting more publicity for this fight than anything else that they did. So are you going to let him fight, or are you going to keep him out? And it looks like in this case, Nate Diaz seemed to be expecting this to get worked out. He's like, I'm here at the presser, and he's telling everybody he's not going to fight anybody unless it's Connor. So if a Diaz can make a flight and get to that presser, you're pretty sure that fight's happening. And that's what lends a lot more credence to this tweet this morning that we're talking about when it was, I think, 2 in the morning Eastern time. That's not super strange because I'm guessing you're in the middle of the day in Iceland.
Right.
Where he probably still is at this point if he wasn't going to come in for the presser. He says, happy to announce that I am back on UFC 200. Shout out to Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta for getting this one done for the fans. Hashtag respect. And I know it should be noted because it's Twitter and these things are important. Both Dana White and Lorenzo were tagged. So this probably is not a surprise to either of them unless Connor's just totally making things up out of left field, which isn't out of the realm of possibility, but I would find very strange at this point.
Strange, but as I said last week, I think Kavanaugh and McGregor are certainly running roughshod all over this organization and their ability to control the message, because if he's not on this card, you know what?
UFC again has to announce that he's not on the card. Well, that puts him in a terrible spot.
You know, you saw and you alluded to in the press conference, that was like the only question. There was like maybe one question for Claudia Gadelha and Johanna Jędrzejczyk, and that was it. There was a couple questions for Jose and Frankie, and it was all about Conor McGregor.
Well, and then there were a ton about questions for Diaz,
yes.
Mostly all about Conor McGregor.
So
and then
it was
Dana
like,
White had to keep telling people Conor McGregor's not there.
And then, you know, going on and on and on about the fairness of the organization and how they wanted it to be fair, which, again, like you said last week, this is not the place where you want to lay your life down on this plot of land over fairness, over a flight from Finland to Las
Iceland.
Vegas.
Iceland.
Sorry, Iceland. Iceland. Whatever Nordic country it was that I may or may not have heritage in, to the United States, right? I don't know that that's what you want to do, and I certainly don't know that if he's tweeting this out at 2 a.m. Eastern time, you know, I don't know that you want to backpedal, because let's remember, 2 a.m. Eastern time is 11 p.m., and Dana White is most certainly up when this is happening. And
or they had just gone to bed, because it's been kind of an insane weekend.
Right, right.
They are at their home base, so they didn't have to fly back. So anything they did, I mean, think about it. These guys are out on Saturday morning, Sunday morning, probably till 4, 5, 6 a.m. easily.
Right.
After that fight. The post-fight presser alone, Vegas time didn't end until after midnight. So, I mean, it's not inconceivable, depending on what these guys are doing, that they might not have seen the tweet as of a couple hours ago. You do have to wonder why there hasn't been a response yet from the UFC, though.
Well, my guess is because we might be right, and maybe it isn't back on, and they don't want to say.
But it's on ESPN, man.
It's everywhere right now.
I know.
But, yeah, there is no.
You're checking right now?
Is I'm just scrolling doing? Through in the last 40 seconds. There's nothing. I mean, there's news organizations pulling this, but there's no.
Well, TMZ is on this, too, yeah. And they say the UFC hasn't confirmed, which is very interesting.
Yes.
What, you're not giving TMZ credit?
No, I'm giving TMZ credit, especially if they're going to be the one doing journalistic checks and balances of saying, hey, we haven't been able to confirm from the actual organization, so maybe we should slow our roll, kids.
So, I think they've been pretty good about that lately. I mean,
yes. So we'll
I know
keep
it's TMZ, but you know, some people tend to write them off, but they are saying, hey, UFC hasn't talked to us yet, so.
We will keep on this.
We're not sure what's going on.
If anything pops up during the show. Okay, so this past weekend, we had.
So wait, are you happy? This will transition into what we're going into next. Are you happy if this is all settled and then he's back on the card?
Yeah, I think
does it set a bad precedent after you spend an hour and a half and 90 minutes in the presser on Friday saying it's not fair, it's not. See, not only is it a ludicrous premise, as you pointed out, but if you decide to buy into the premise and just keep selling it, and oh wait, a day and a half later, it's not true. You sat there for 90 minutes and told all these fighters, you're going to be fair. This isn't fair. I got to be fair to you. All these guys from Brazil, this one guy from Jersey. I got to be fair, 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 fair. Oh, fight's back on. Cool. Everybody cool? Everybody cool.
Right. So am I happy? Yeah, I'm happy. Do I think anybody sitting at the press conference didn't think it was going to happen? Of course they wanted to happen because they all want any one of them that has points on the pay-per-view wants this to happen.
It's not just points. It's being on the pay-per-view. It's being on that card for UFC 200.
But from a pragmatic reason, right? If you got points on the pay-per-view, of course you want Conor because it's going to double the sales of this thing.
I'm just saying, you don't. It doesn't even matter if you got points. You want more eyeballs on you for value in the future. That's why guys like to be on pay-per-view cards. Everybody wanted to be on the Anderson Silva cards. Everybody wanted to be on the John Jones cards. That's what a Conor McGregor card is now. So those guys all, well, maybe the exception is Rafael, because he's not going to get any more eyeballs.
No, he's not.
On him, he's fighting on Fight Pass. And it's an interesting situation to kind of go in there and say, hey, fairness, 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 fairness. And if this is true, that he's back on the bill all of a sudden. It's also very interesting if they were as close as you seem to think they were. And I kind of think they were because of Nate Diaz's responses and attendance. They were pushing pretty hard in all of the pre-fights to say, hey, DC is basically, and we're waiting for DC's medical test today.
Yes.
DC is basically saying, John, I want you in the cage at UFC 200. They spent a lot of time on that on the show, probably more than I ever remember, very much in a WWE way, like go out and set this up. Go out and tell them this is what you want to do.
Well, because I cannot remember.
Why spend that much time on it if you really think Conor's coming back? Because you don't do that on top of it.
No.
That's a waste.
Although there was a question, and then I'll get to my actual comment. There was a question on the presser from a gentleman, I believe, from Ireland, saying that over in the UK, they're running a promo right now for UFC 200 that says there's three title fights.
Mm-hmm.
There are only two mentioned right now.
Okay.
So they're running a promo right now that says they're...
Maybe they're going to edit in RF... Rafael.
Well, Dana said at the presser that he's working on something he can't talk about, which I'm assuming is this. But what I was going to say prior to that is I cannot remember, and you please correct me on this, I cannot remember a time when they did the WWE thing where the champion slash challenger, doesn't matter, sat at the table and commented on said match.
No, and I think that was really interesting, too. I think some people may be reading a little more into it.
What do you mean?
Did you watch the Fight Pass? Fights?
Yes.
DC was on those.
Yes.
And then he came off, obviously, during the...
FS1.
The FS1 and most of the main card. I think that's twofold. I think a lot of people are saying, wow, that's really interesting. He's there. This has got to be happening. Well, I think there's a lot of that to it. I also think DC is one of the guys who's setting himself up for that post-fight career. And he said so on many occasions. And I think, you know, him sitting in that chair was part of that. If you're gonna have the guy there, have him in there against probably one of the guys he's going to fight. I mean, we knew for sure if John Jones won, that was going to be the fight. I would have to think Ovin St. Preux would have been a strong, strong candidate if he had been able to win that fight. So definitely interesting. I don't know if it's as conspiracy theory related as a lot of people are giving it credit for. I do think we're going to see DC in that spot within the next 5 years easily.
Well, and what I was saying is I liked it, and I hope they would do more of it because I think it adds some credence. And
but not everybody can do it.
No, but when applicable, like I said, I can't remember another time that they did it.
I think he can do it. I thought Rashad did a great job on the UFC post-fight show. I don't know if he's going to be in that position again, obviously, for
Dominic
the next
Cruz could obviously do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's a couple of other guys, but what I liked about it were things like when Ovin St. Preux goes back to, and we'll just morph into Jones and OSP and we'll work our way backwards, guys. So when Ovin St. Preux goes to the corner at the end of round one and his team does nothing for the mouse appearing over his eye, and Rogan asks DC about it, and DC he couched it a little bit.
He has to, he's still an active fighter, he's right. Going to couch it. Some.
You know, couches it a little bit because he's still an active fighter, but essentially said, look, there are some things that OSP's corner does at times that I...
Or doesn't do.
Or doesn't
the
do.
The more telling part of that,
that
statement.
I don't quite understand as somebody who's at this point. And then he went on to couch it by saying, but we're in a situation that they've never been in before, fighting a guy that, you know, most consider to be one of the best on the planet, although I'll argue that later. So I thought that kind of nuance was interesting because you can't really get that from Joe or Goldberg because neither one of them have been in that position.
Well, you could get it, but you're not going to have as much credence to it. And that's what's really great about having some fighters on the broadcast. You know, they can say, hey, what would happen in there is I wouldn't necessarily tell my guy. My corner's got to be aware of that. And this corner doesn't necessarily do that all the time. So I did think that was very interesting. I also thought it was very interesting to kind of listen to the entire fight. Because you knew. And did you watch the post-fight? They did an interesting thing, too, with DC being there. They stayed on the air much longer than they normally do.
Yes.
Did you watch all of that?
I did, yes.
Okay, so you could hear it during the fight. You could see it during the post-fight interview segment that they did with DC, or I guess you'd say closing thoughts if he's considered a broadcaster for the night. He realized that he missed a big, big opportunity. He had a chance on that night, if he could have gotten into the cage, to dispatch John Jones.
Sure he did.
And I know John Jones has couched it a lot, using your term from earlier, saying, maybe subconsciously I didn't want to finish the fight. This, that, the other thing. I had to switch up for a southpaw, even though Ovin St. Preux fought standard most of the time.
Most of it, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't change that. He changed out of that stance rarely, actually. So it was an opportunity lost that night, and Daniel Cormier saw that, and you could tell there was a lot of ring rust there. I told you that would happen, and not that a ton of people disagreed.
Did you anticipate it would be that bad?
I knew it would be pretty bad.
Okay.
And I knew it would be pretty bad in the way that it was bad. Not that John Jones was a bad fighter, or that when he landed things that they weren't going to hurt somebody. It was going to be and he admitted it after the fight. He would recognize situations but not be able to take advantage of them, which has always been John Jones. That's that fighter.
Sure.
John Jones is that guy. He's going to recognize what happened. And then you're going to eat seven elbows from seven angles and not know what happened to you. You're going to get caught against the cage and in a clinch, and you're not going to know what happened to you because knees start flying out of everywhere. You're going to get ground and pounded because you got tripped because he saw something. He said in those occasions he wasn't able to figure out what he wanted to do with that. Some of that has to do with timing. Some of that easily it can be attributable to fight speed. Just getting in there and actually fighting at speed for the first time. He did say, you know, and a lot of people called him out. We had some folks on our Facebook page saying, this wasn't a John Jones fight. This is embarrassing. You know, John said it right after the fight. He goes, look, I don't know if it was subconscious, which I think means it was consciously, and he was trying to admit.
Right.
He needed to get to the DC fight. He did not want to blow that opportunity. And remember the stresses the dude had in his life. He was very, very close to losing all of this. He lost his title. He was out of the UFC for a year. On top of that, he's been out of the cage for 15 months. So he knows in his mind how close he was. That's got to be a scary thing. It doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank or how dominant you were. That's got to be a scary thing in your life. Like, the thing that I'm good at, the thing that I do, the thing that I've built my life towards, I might have screwed it all up. And I guarantee that stayed in his head a lot. And I guarantee that was in his head during that fight, especially a couple times when you would see that if Ovin St. Preux could have pushed that fight in instances, he might have been able to take better advantage. I mean, the best punch of the fight was Ovin St. Preux landing that big right hand
round
on John
two.
Jones.
Yes. Yep.
And after that, you saw Jones just, okay, whatever. I'm just going to hit you. I'm going to get out. I'm going to do a couple things. I'm going to get out. And I'm gonna stay right here out of your range because you're a big dude, but I still got a little bit of range on you. I'm gonna throw these teep kicks all night long. I'm gonna keep you off balance. I'm not necessarily gonna rush in and try to finish this fight though. If the finish were to come to John, I think he would have taken care of it. But he certainly in that fight, he had a lot of things going on in his head. The interesting thing is, I don't know if you necessarily lose all those things now that you've gotten this fight all the way. Will it be better next time? More than likely. Will it be entirely old school John Jones in that fight against DC? I don't think so. There's going to be a lot of whispers and a lot of people wondering, hey, was that the John Jones we get now? Is that the John Jones we see after 15 months off?
And, man, what I found to be really interesting.
He couldn't finish a guy with a broken arm in two rounds?
Right.
Is that John Jones now?
Well,
those whispers and those echoes are going to be in his head now. He did what he had to do. I'm not going to complain. A guy was out 15 months. If you didn't know what you were getting buying that pay-per-view, I'm sorry for you. And I guess get it. There's probably a lot of casual fans that bought that going, oh, it's the John Jones fight, without thinking about the fact that the dude had prison time facing him, without thinking about the fact that he was essentially fired from the UFC, without thinking about the fact that if he loses this fight, where is he? I mean, he loses to the number six guy in the world. He's not close to a title shot unless he gets a big win over another guy. But where is he mentally after that type of thing? So there was a lot at play for John Jones. I give him a lot of credit. He went in there against a tough dude. He went in there against the guy that didn't go down. He went in there against the guy who had what you would call the most puncher's chance of puncher's chances, where when Ovince St. Preux lands a knockout punch, it's from a weird angle, and you don't know what's going on. So you could see in the fight, John didn't want to let him get close or get off on him at any point because he was worried. Because, you know, he said it in the post-fight presser, too. He said, because of an opportunity. If I give him an opportunity, you know, he essentially went back to the old line. A fight's a fight. And if he lands a punch, I lose my title shot because I could get knocked out. And he wasn't going to let that happen, and he fought the fight he had to fight. And, I can't criticize the guy for that. He came back. He did what he did. I don't know if he needs to dance around with his family beforehand, but we'll talk about that later.
Well, and what I was saying is I found it really interesting that Ovince St. Preux really – I mean, I get that he's going to gas. We all knew that that was going to happen because 3 weeks' notice to prepare for John Jones is very difficult. John had his best rounds at midway through the third round and then obviously four and five when he just absolutely dismantled
OSP. He had really good rounds, but I thought OSP had his best moments later in the fight. And I think
– in that fifth round for sure.
I think OSP – and in the fourth round, he came out and looked – as good as he looked in the first round, which, again, wasn't beating John Jones. But, Daniel Cormier noted it, and then Joe Rogan kind of dovetailed off the fact it's like, okay, he's here in the fourth round. Now he doesn't have to worry about his gas anymore. So maybe that second and third round were an anomaly. And if you were to drag this dude back into a cage for a title fight, he knows he can go five rounds. He might be a lot more dangerous. He was already dangerous in the cage. And this is one of those nights where you look at both fighters and go, okay, this worked out. John got his title shot, and OSP is a legit title contender at this point.
Yeah, I the only thing I would say is that when he goes back to camp today or tomorrow or Wednesday.
Well, his arm's broke, so he's not going back to camp for a while.
Whenever.
And how tough is that?
Right.
How tough is that?
Well, I think that's a bit of the football player mentality. Lots of those guys, that end up in the UFC. I mean, you've seen it with over and over and over again. Not that that takes away from the toughness. It's super tough and crazy. What I was saying is when he gets back into camp, those guys need to work on him not being caught in the moment and letting go, because in rounds one through three, if he was as loose as he was four and five when he has a broken arm, maybe that fight looks a little bit differently, because when he throws that best punch of the night, there was only one other punch that came after it, and then that was it. And there was a lot of that with him in those first couple rounds that he needed to get rid of quicker in order to make some things happen with those weird angles that he has. Because if you throw one punch to John Jones, he's going to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you throw two, he's going to figure that out. It's when you're doing three, four, or five.
The trainers, they all have a slightly different way of saying it, but it's not one thing. It's not two things. Do three, four. Four or five things, and those five things don't all have to be punches. Land a punch, try to land another punch, maybe land a kick on your duck on your way out, throw another kick, do something, do three or four different things every time you do something. That's what you should be thinking about, and each trainer has their own mindset there. And the problem was, I think almost every time Ovince St. Preux got in there, he was doing one or two things. And I will say this, John Jones was doing the same thing.
Sure.
He was trying to stay safe that night. He was just more effective, and he was very John Jones in the way that if he lands one or two, you're stumbling around a bit.
Yes.
I think John could have finished that fight a couple times. But again, do you walk into what could be a KO punch when you've got a title shot literally sitting outside the cage watching you? That's another interesting part of this mental game. John knows he's sitting there the whole time, and he's talking about you.
And what I'm saying is, though, from a challenger standpoint, when you start to, or your corner starts to notice that the guy you're fighting against, who might be one of the best on the planet, is only throwing one or two things, if you just get a skosh busier, you could make some things happen, because he is being super reserved because he doesn't want to walk into those things.
Well, you saw it in the fight, too. I believe it was in the fourth round. And I want to say Daniel Cormier did a great job of maintaining his impartiality. But there was a moment in the round where you saw Ovince kind of land a punch, push forward, land another punch. And you just kind of heard Daniel go, there you go. Like if you would just do that,
right?
You're going to be much better off in this fight. So definitely an interesting night. John did what he had to get the win, which sounds kind of interesting when you've got a couple of when you've got a 10-8 round in there. But that's John Jones, and that's the standard, and that also speaks to the toughness of the opponent.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, we can argue about the judging if you want. I don't want to spend much time doing that, but like I think the 10-8 round, there really wasn't anything I saw that I thought was 10-8.
I thought he was almost finished there in the, was it the third? I'd have to do a rewatch.
But most, I watched it three times, and most of those rounds, it, you know, the first half, it's pretty much tied. I guess it depends on how you want to score it, right? I mean, if you're going to say...
Well, I don't mind a 10-8 round if you think a guy could have gotten a finish in another minute or two, and I think there was one round where OSP was on his back and eating punches, and basically, you know, the commentator's saying, okay, he's going to get through the round, though. And when you're at that point, I don't mind a 10-8 there. But again, that goes to other discussions, which we're not going to have right now, of these need to be handed out more often to be more common.
Correct. Yeah, for sure. Okay, the co-main event, as I promised you, 0% chance.
Oh, stop.
0% chance.
Stop.
That Henry Cejudo can stop DJ. And I will argue this, and I argued this on Saturday night. Demetrius Johnson, let me tell you, when you see John Jones and Demetrius Johnson in the same card, to me, it becomes really obvious. If you're not going to, because we're not going to have this debate, so I'm going to stop you before you get there.
I'm not starting anything.
We're not going to debate resumes. There is not a...
Hold on, let me get the resumes.
There is not a better MMA fighter in the UFC right now. There isn't one. I'm sorry. I'm not going to listen to whatever you're about to say. There isn't a better fighter. He has dispatched everybody, and I don't disagree with Shab and Rogan, who says his next fight should be Dominic Cruz to get that win back. That is his next step, because if they make him fight the stupid winner of Stupid Tough 24 for the 15 seconds it's going to take him to smash them, I think that's a huge mistake.
I don't think that's going to be the case. I didn't take that from Dana White's 200 presser either. Or I'm sorry, this is the post-fight presser
now. Yeah.
Did you watch that?
I did not.
No. Okay, no, I do not believe that Dana White's even thinking about that. He didn't basically shut it down, but he wouldn't answer the question. And not in a, oh, that's what we're going to do anyways kind of way. But he's working on some stuff for him. Rashad Evans also said on the post-fight presser, you know, he's a prize fighter. The most interesting thing for him to do is to now go up to 135.
Yes.
The one caveat there is, in the post-fight presser, over and over and over and over again, he said he wants to go after Anderson Silva's title defense record, which puts him at four more fights, I believe, at his weight class. We could look that up in a minute. I don't know if I want to see four more fights with this dude.
Are you
at
on
this
his
weight
record,
class?
Are you on his record right now?
Well, I'm looking at the reason I'm looking that up is because we start hearing a lot about all the finishes he had. And then two in the UFC. So cool, dude. No, I really enjoyed this fight. I enjoyed the fight. I was shocked by it. If you look at Henry Cejudo in the post-fight presser, they're on YouTube and everything, too. If you guys want to watch these things and you don't want to stay up till 4 in the morning like I do.
Yep.
Watch Henry Cejudo's body language and just listen to his answers. He was humbled. He literally said, I was humbled. I did not expect that. That is something that's never happened to me. I don't know if anybody watched some of the pre-fight stuff. And it was a very interesting setup for Henry Cejudo when they were kind of talking to him. They were in his trophy room. And did you see the trophy room?
Yes.
And the walls obviously are covered. And I know every fighter that gets to the UFC, they've got trophies. This dude has national championship wrestling trophies.
Like 12 of them or something, right?
It's wallpaper. Yeah. It's wallpaper on his wall. There's so many of them up there. And he kind of jokes. He goes, yeah, I don't think anybody in the UFC's got any. Daniel. Daniel's got a couple. And he made it a point to say a couple. So to think that was going to happen the way it did, I'm going to call you a liar. Dominating performance. But it's a certain point here with a guy like Demetrius Johnson where, cool, you did that. If he had done that 6-7 times in the last 10 fights, he'd be one of the biggest stars on the planet. He's going to start doing it now. Okay, but we're going to have to see what's going to happen with these other guys in the division. There's only two, I believe, in the top eight, maybe three in the top ten that he hasn't fought yet.
He has not fought Formiga. He has not fought Makowski, Reyes, Dustin Ortiz.
And what's interesting is some of these guys...
Or Ali Bagatinov. Now, Ali is...
No, he fought Bagatinov, didn't he?
No.
Yeah, he fought him at 174.
Yes, sorry, yes.
So, and that's the interesting thing is
positive, right? Isn't that when he got suspended? Ali got suspended for that?
Oh, I don't remember that one. No contest time for him? I'm not sure. Oh, yeah. EPO still couldn't beat him. So what's interesting is you do have some decently ranked guys there, but only because Demetrius Johnson has beat all the other guys down in the rankings, essentially.
So you've got three, really. And I mean, like,
But do you here's what I ask you. Because you say he's the best fighter in MMA.
Hands down.
Hands down. Do you want to see him fight four more times at this weight class to go for the Anderson Silva record? And I may be off a fight or two on that.
Okay, let me answer this twofold. One, I think what we're learning with the Conor McGregor experiment is that these guys should have more control over their careers. And if that is the thing that he wants to go after, I think he's the champ at that weight. I don't think you need to force him to fight Dominic Cruz. Now, as a fan, I feel that that's the more interesting test, because watching him destroy three more people does two things that he doesn't want to do. One, it makes more people, like, we're on our Facebook page this weekend, more people post things like he's the best fighter on the planet that nobody cares about. Two, he beat up people that nobody cares about. So three, I don't care that he beat Anderson Silva's record, because Anderson Silva fought serial killers at 185 pounds.
Well, and that goes also back to the fact, and John Jones was very diplomatic in the way he answered the question. He was asked about pound-for-pound fighter status. And what do you think? You had been essentially the pound-for-pound best fighter in the world. A lot of people, obviously, with your time off, have said, hey, Demetrius Johnson is that guy. What do you believe about that now? And, you know, he was very respectful in his answer, but he also pointed out the fact that at this point, John Jones has beaten five or six, and John didn't even know. It's not
right.
Just me. This is his answer.
Right.
Five, six former world champions. Nobody's ever done that. And I get if you're that dominant in the division as Demetrius Johnson is, sometimes those guys just never have the shot at the title. There's not necessarily the history there, because I'm going to tell you one thing. I still think Henry Cejudo, at his point in his career, is a much more legit contender than the point where John Jones beat Rampage Jackson in his career.
Yes.
And I get that guy was a former world champion, so you've got a little more history there. But, you know, you want to talk about Murderer's Row, Anderson Silva, John Jones, they get the default credit there because their divisions have been around longer. They had more opportunities to fight guys that we know about, and that's what happened in that situation. So I don't know if Demetrius Johnson is the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. I can tell you unequivocally, though, as somebody who's not even a big fan of his, we saw the two best pound-for-pound fighters on the planet on Saturday night.
That is undeniable,
one,
right?
One may not have been the pound-for-pound best fighter on that night in the world, but those two best fighters in the world were on the same card, and that's something pretty special, and you don't see it very often.
You do not, and, you know, I think a lot of people had the opportunity to take advantage of and check that out, because
he needs three more wins to break Anderson Silva's record. That stands at 10, so three more fights at this weight class. You know what? I'm not the biggest fan. Let me say this so you don't even have to.
Yeah, I know you are.
I'm not the biggest fan. I would take these types of fights for three more fights.
Oh, if he's going to destroy people? Sure,
right.
He would.
You'd go out there and impress the hell out of me and finish fights, and then go out there afterwards and tell everybody you're the pound-for-pound best because you just annihilated somebody. It's hard even in the UFC with the best fighters in the world, even as the champion, to go out there if you adjust five-round decision to guy and then start claiming you're the best fighter on the planet and you don't get respect. I loved his post-fight interview this time because, you know what? He backed it up with what he did in the cage before it.
Yeah.
If you say that same thing after I just sat for 25 minutes watching you hop around, I'm not a fan. I'm not looking forward to what you're about to say. You went in there. You annihilated a dude. By the way, again, don't take anything away from that guy. Those gold they don't hand those gold medals out. One person in the world every 4 years gets that gold medal. One person in the world every 4 years.
Yep.
For him to do what he did was amazing on Saturday night. I wouldn't mind watching him do it a couple more times, but at some point you're going to have to say, okay, what's interesting here and what is he doing? When he says he's got to pay his bills, I think his bills are all right. But he says he's got to pay the light bill.
I think it's a slight knock against them taking away his Xbox deal and him having to go to Twitch to kind of make up that revenue.
And I get that.
Because guys like you, no, I'm not taking a shot, but like lots of people don't care that he doesn't sell pay-per-views. He's on John Jones because that'll get people to watch him.
Well, and let's be real, though. The Xbox deal is only because of the fact that he was close in proximity.
Regardless, money is money, right?
No, money is money. And again, I'm just saying, if that's what you're going to say, this is what pays the electric bill. Okay, well, what's going to pay the bill? Is it going to be you fighting another 10 dudes at 125? Or is it going to be you jumping up in weight and maybe trying to get that win back? Or just jumping up in weight and picking a guy? Pick another guy first.
You want to pick? I love this. I love where this is going. Should he pick Dodson, who he chased up to 135?
Maybe. I mean, I don't. But does anybody want to watch that? I mean, you kind of defeat the purpose of going up in weight.
I sort of want to watch
you
that.
You sort of want to watch it.
Make him go up to 45. And
I don't know. Call out CM Punk. Let's see if we'll ever get him in the cage.
That will never just like my call of Henry Cejudo never having a chance to beat DJ, you are not going to see CM Punk in the Octagon.
Ever?
In 16, 1,000%, and probably not in 17, and if it's not in the next 2 years, it ain't happening.
Oh, for sure. If it's not in the next 2 months, it's not happening. I'm not.
Okay.
I'm disappointed, but I'm not blinded by it.
I got a couple people. I was on Snapchat on Saturday night talking about the fights, and I got a couple people who were which I thought was odd. I mean, I'm glad people are checking us out after checking us out on Snapchat, but that were amazed that I picked Barboza and was right over Anthony Pettis. Now let me back this up and say that, like, in his last two fights, Anthony Pettis has looked pretty unremarkable. And to me, it appears that he has kind of plateaued at where he can be, at least in the ecosystem of the UFC. So when I see a guy like Edson Barboza, who I just think has a better striking set and doesn't rely, I mean, he's flashy, don't get me wrong, but he doesn't rely on the highlight reel jumping off the cage, kicking Benson Henderson in the head to be the thing that he wins. And even on Saturday night, when Anthony Pettis goes to do the crazy stuff, all of it misses.
Yeah, all of it missed, and it was definitely forced into the fight. I didn't think you were crazy by any means. Here's the interesting thing. As much as you laid out the prior two fights with Anthony Pettis, I thought Anthony looked as decent as he could in that fight.
Let me pause you for just 1 second. Dana White just responded. Tells the LA Times, McGregor's return to UFC, not UFC 200, not true. Don't know why he would treat that.
Really?
Yes. Huh. So, not confirmed. Okay, Anthony Pettis.
We're just going to stop on that.
Well, I mean, what else are you going to... I just wanted to make sure that people are up to date. Dana White is saying that is not true, which I think leads that it'll be Jones and DC mentioned in the next two days.
Okay, I wonder, did DC have an early morning doctor's appointment? And if that hadn't gone well, then, oh yeah, no, Connor, yep, he's totally back in. Cool.
So there you go. LA Times.
Now I got to transition back to Anthony Pettis.
Okay,
this.
Now we're talking about Anthony Pettis.
Okay. I don't remember what I was saying about Anthony Pettis.
Jumping around
to figure
and
out what the hell Conor McGregor's thinking at
this
point.
Well, we'll see.
Okay, so Dana White says that's you got that legit source.
Legit source, yes.
Okay, legit-ish. Anthony Pettis didn't look that bad in this fight. The problem was he just got eaten alive by
Edson Barboza.
Barboza, and I mean, those kicks, the purple leg. He had a footprint on his stomach when the fight was over. It was insane, the beating that he took there. And it was interesting because Dana White was asked after the fights that night, okay, where does this leave Anthony Pettis? And, you know, he didn't really give an answer in that regard. And the reporter, I forget who's taking over for Ariel. It was my apologies to her. But she had a good question there. She's like, well, look at the guys that's beat him. And Dana basically responded, well, that's what happens when you're in the UFC and you're a top five guy. You have to fight other top five guys. And if you can't beat those top five guys, we have to look at the situation. So I know you were talking a lot about whether or not he gets cut at this point. I don't know. I don't think you cut him for that fight, but I could certainly understand.
Well, it's three in a row.
It is three in a row, but I also think Edson Barboza is going to be that dude, and you've called it. You know, he's going to be another guy at that lightweight division who's fighting for a title soon. I would much rather see Edson Barboza fight Rafael Dos Anjos than anybody else at this point after watching what he did on Saturday night. So, I mean, do you cut him? Do you not? Do you kind of see where Edson goes? I mean, this could be another one of those instances where you might give Pettis another fight, and then if Edson has another great fight, then okay, he lost to a guy that's about to fight
sure.
for the championship.
Well, I bring this up specifically.
I mean, is Anthony Pettis making so much money that
No.
I wouldn't keep him, or they just work through him,
bring
and then
this
awkwardness with his brother, and they got to tell him that they fired his brother.
I bring this up because Friday night was an interesting night in that it was Benson Henderson's debut in Bellator, where he got absolutely shellacked in his debut at Bellator. And so,
didn't he try a little wheel kick too, I thought?
I bring this up because it's interesting to me that the UFC clearly knew what they were betting on when they went, yeah, go test the waters, buddy. Go mm-hmm. get your money.
I told you they knew that. That was going to happen. And I'm not saying I called it, but I mean,
so
they didn't care that he left for Bellator, and they knew why.
So why I say that is because, of course, Anthony Pettis and Benson Henderson, a rematch, is something that I think that Bellator could not stay away from if they had the opportunity to make that.
Who cares, though?
I'm with you. But from the organization, if you think that Anthony is in the same position that Benson is, that they're going to go...
They're going to go and lose to each other.
Lose to each other.
It's going to be a double countout like the end of Rocky.
Yes. Double countout in Bellator. That's why I was asked. asking.
Okay.
Probably the worst fight of the night, I think, was the Whitaker Natal fight.
I didn't think it was the worst.
It was terrible
because it was on such a strong pay per view card.
Well, I just like neither one. I mean, Natal looked awful. Whitaker didn't really look. I just didn't think either guy. Maybe it is compared to the body of work. You know.
That's one of those fights. In it, I enjoyed it. I thought, for a middleweight fight, these guys looked interesting, like they might have some power behind them. It's, you know, is it somebody I'm going to throw in there with Luke Rockhold immediately? No, but I mean, I want to see a little more from Rob. I want to see more from the guy, maybe.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm saying this.
I'm going to mark this one down, and then if I'm right, I'll bring it up. If I'm not right, I'll never mention it again.
Well,
Robert Whittaker's in there for the title fight.
You will have no problem having to never mention this again, because I don't think
you'll see
much from Robert Whittaker. And maybe, you know, maybe I'm a victim of the now, because the Yair Rodriguez fight I thought was so much fun.
Yes. The whoop-de-dipty, where's that kick coming from? Boom?
Yes.
That's what I named it.
You know, Andre Fili had some moments, but just could not keep...
Most of them were on the ground.
Yes. Well, I mean, and that was where he was going to have his heyday, was when getting it to the ground or keeping it close. He just could not transcend that distance and was spent most of his time in what we call no man's land, getting his face kicked off by Yair Rodriguez. And I thought that was just a very, very fun fight to kick off the pay-per-view, and just a brilliant, brilliant performance from Yair Rodriguez. Coming off of Fox Sports 1, Sergio Pettis wins a unanimous decision. A couple of people asked me on Twitter, so I thought I'd recap here in case you're wondering. The Pettis brothers have fought three times on three different cards. They fought on this past weekend, where they split the difference, 1-1, 1 lost. They fought on UFC 185, where they both won, and they fought again at UFC 181, where they both lost.
That's pretty cool, because I think you're probably the only person that's kept that much track that isn't named Pettis.
Yes.
So
I'm the unofficial third Pettis
brother.
You
and that one lady in the presser that asked Sergio a question and caught him off guard. He didn't even know where the mic was. Wait, Sergio, what do you think about having your brother?
Wait, somebody wants to talk to me?
Hold on. Sorry, is this the mic?
Yeah, so, there you go. There's your Pettis brothers breakdown.
And then, Kevin Lee.
Can't fire him.
Kevin Lee
beats these segments on the show.
Beats Efrain Escudero in the undercard. And the only other thing I wanted to talk about in the undercard was Walt Harris beating Cody East. And if you know much about the Cody East story, he was, of course, a guy with a criminal past that lots of people questioned why he made it to the UFC, even after being on Looking for a Fight. But no worries, he was KO'd by Walt Harris. And to me, probably one of the best moments of the night was when Walt Harris looks at Joe Rogan and says, I've been practicing this moment in the mirror for most of my life.
And then that's, by the way, that's not the fight. That's getting to talk to Joe Rogan.
Getting to talk to Joe Rogan, which I think is like, you cannot, in the same way that you just, when I see Sage Northcutt, I just love the energy, because I'm genuinely excited for people who are genuinely excited. When somebody wins a fight and goes, all I've wanted to do my entire career is talk to Joe Rogan, I think that's just a really cool moment, and it was fun to see that on Fight Pass.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Are we wrapping up?
I think so.
Okay,
yeah.
So
I mean, assuming that there's no more
official word from Dana White at this point,
there's
no deal in place. Connor says there is. Beyonce dropped an album on Saturday, which is an allegory for Conor McGregor's relationship with the UFC at this point. So
yes.
Make sure you check that out online, too.
Yeah. So
you checking your phone?
Yeah, and just making sure before we walk out of here.
So as of 11:44, Conor McGregor says 200 back on. Dana White says, I don't know what he's talking about. And we still haven't heard about Daniel Cormier's doctor test.
I missed this part of the quote, and we'll end the show on this, I promise. So TMZ is like fleshing out the LA Times story a little bit. Dana White says, not true. We haven't talked to Conor or his manager since the press conference. Don't know why he would tweet that. He adds, all the media keeps asking me that. I feel like the scene in Step Brothers when they ask if they could build the bunk beds.
Nice Step Brothers reference for everybody.
And on that note,
there will be so many room for activities at UFC 200.
On that note, make sure you're following us on Twitter and on Facebook. I will do Facebook Live tonight or tomorrow if we get any definitive on this. So at Wow Show on Facebook and or Twitter. Have a wonderful, wonderful
Monday.
You
want to do karate in the garage?
In the bunk beds? We'll talk to you next week. It's Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.